Case number 07-5385, Damon Elliott, Appellant versus United States Department of Agriculture. Mr. Romana for the amicus curiae, Ms. McBarnett for the appellee.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Anand Raman. I'm with the law firm of McGuire Woods. In May, this court appointed me as an amicus to represent the interests of the appellant in this matter, Damon Elliott. At its core, this appeal is about the scope of Exemption 2 of the Freedom of Information Act, and in particular, the High 2 portion of the exemption. In addition to the core legal issue on appeal here, this appeal is also about whether Damon Elliott got a fair shake in the adjudication of his FOIA claims in the trial court. I've identified three reversible errors, which I'd like to take in turn. First, the core legal issue. The government agrees that the ruling of this court in Crooker versus Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and its progeny governs the issues in this case. Where we disagree is what those rulings mean, the scope of Exemption 2, and in particular, the High 2 exemption.
So under your theory, if Al-Qaeda submitted a FOIA request for the blueprints of the Treasury building, what result?
I think, hypothetically speaking, that might fall within the scope of Exemption 2, and there's...
How? It seems exactly the same as this case.
Well, no, it's not exactly the same as this case, because setting aside... for the moment, that the record is not at all clear on the lines that need to be drawn by the government, the burden on the government to show.
Leave aside the fact. Yeah. He's asking you a hypothetical where the evidence is developed. Do you agree that if the government could show that, I don't know, a million people will die if the blueprints are turned over, that that's sufficient or not?
Well, let's go through the analysis. Is there a significant risk here? If the government could show that burden with an Al-Qaeda, if it was clear that Al-Qaeda was that, there's a significant risk.
Any problem with rules, practices, related, solely, personnel. None of those words matter to you.
The problem with your answer is that, I mean, you're now talking about the second step of the Exemption 2 analysis, circumvention. We're talking about the first step. Namely, does it relate to personnel? Does it relate to policies and practices? You've got to get over that before you get to circumvention.
Well, if the question is the blueprints of the BARC, then the answer is I still think it's unclear.
I mean, I thought your argument was that you're arguing here that these do not relate to any policies or practices, right? Isn't that your position?
I think the argument at this stage is that we know at least some of the documents are not predominantly internal, and that is to say that...
No, but the government's argument is that as a whole, they're a problem. I mean, the fact that a few of them may not be doesn't get you anywhere at this stage of the analysis. Do these relate to personnel, to policies or practices, or shed light on them? And the government's... Here's the key. The government says in response, look, this... We can't release these because it relates to or will shed light on how we do security assessments, right?
That's right.
That's what they say. Now, what's wrong with that argument?
Well, there are several issues wrong, but what I'm trying to argue right now is that the High 2 component of this analysis, the second part of the analysis, which is what I was trying to answer, that's where this breaks down here. The government has the burden to establish a significant risk, a significant likelihood of circumvention.
But we don't get to circumvention unless the documents are covered without going through the first step. Right? There's two steps. Number one, do they relate to internal policies and practices, right? If they do, then the government can protect them from disclosure by showing circumvention, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so don't talk about circumvention yet. The government, The government can argue as much circumvention as it wants. It won't help it if these documents don't satisfy the internality test.
Right? I agree with that, Your Honor, but on this record, I'm not sure that we can come to that conclusion.
Well, then maybe that's why we should remand this case. I mean, the fact is that...
I think you should remand it for a number of reasons.
The fact is that...
That being one of them, but mm-hmm. also with the guidance on the scope of Exemption 2, and in particular the High 2. I think, Your Honor, and maybe I misunderstood the question, I am glossing over for the moment the first prong of the test, because it's really hard to talk about what's in these blueprints because no
but
one's
you
ever
can't
seen
gloss, them. Under our case law, you can't gloss over that. That's the first
step. For the sake of this argument, I think it could possibly be that when we look at these documents, they have nothing to do with the personnel rules and practices of an agency. Now, the government...
We've long since, and look, if this were statutory text, I would have been with Judge Wilkie and Jordan. You would win here, but we're a long way from that at this point. And you know, we've read arguably personnel out of it, we've read arguably internal out of it, we've added in risk of circumvention. I don't see how we've completely rewritten the statute. So that's on us. I realize that. But having rewritten it, we now have to apply it as we've rewritten
it. I understand. And I would even agree, especially in Crooker, this court did expand or really build on the Supreme Court in Rose, really did expand the scope of Exemption 2, what would be properly withheld under Exemption 2.
So just to be clear then, you are not arguing that blueprints could not be related solely to the internal personnel rules and practices of an agency, the very first step. You're not arguing that this is that it's impossible that any set of blueprints would come under rule under Exemption 2.
No, I am not.
And your client did not argue that below.
No, my client did not argue that below. I'm simply stating that under the record that we have here, it's impossible to tell if they satisfy, they fall within or fall outside of the statutory.
Right, so if we were to remand, what would make it fall within?
On the record, that would fall within.
If it were remanded, what kind of affidavit from the government would be sufficient? Assuming it's factually correct.
Yes,
but if it were, what would be sufficient?
Well, I think what we would need to see on the record is a more detailed description of the particular portions of the blueprints. We're talking about...
Now we're on segregatability, for example, right?
I'm sorry?
You're on the question of whether it's segregatable or not.
That's right.
All right, but imagine that the blueprints show, just hypothetically, imagine the blueprints showed where there were points of entry that were unguarded, showed where there were fences and where there were not. Imagine it showed where the radioactive material is stored. Imagine it showed where the biological toxins are stored. Mm-hmm. You agree that all those things, if it showed those things, would be protected?
I do agree, and this is a limited agreement, but I do agree.
You're at the end, just like the last guy, you can take all your agreements back.
Cautious up front. My limited agreement is yes, I think that some of those actually could be if they link it, so long as they link it to the rules and practices. And here, what the government, I believe, is arguing is it's the practice of securing the bark. And so if that's the case, those portions of the blueprint would fall within the first prong of Exemption 1. I'm not at all arguing that as a matter of law, blueprints are not do not fall within the scope of the first prong of Crooker. That's not at all what I'm arguing. I think that could be the case. Mm-hmm. I know that in this case, the government has conceded that there are some number of blueprints that have been disclosed to historical societies and cultural societies. And so the predominant internality test then is not satisfied. So for that portion of documents, those portion of documents no longer fall.
That's not the scope of your argument, though. You're not asking just for those things that have already been publicly disclosed.
No, not at all. And that's why we're going to the second portion.
So the government, in its brief, they rely on this proposition from our decision in Schwerner, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Judicial willingness to sanction a weak relationship to rules and practices may be greatest when the asserted government interest is relatively weighty. Right?
Yes.
Okay, so what do you think that means in this case?
I think that could have some bearing in this case, but given the law of this circuit. That's, I think, really on the periphery of the law.
This statement, this was a, this statement in Schwerner is on the periphery?
Well, it is in the sense, it is Why? In the sense that what we're not, that this isn't about a challenge to whether the government is correct. It's a challenge to
the question is whether there's a sufficient relationship between these documents and policies and practices to justify covering them under Exemption 2, right?
That's correct.
And what Schwerner says, what Judge Williams said in Schwerner is that the government gets the benefit of the doubt, or it gets a more tenuous relationship when its interest is relatively weighty.
I think that's
and
right.
Why isn't that implicate the issue in this case? Because the government says, the government invokes these security assessments as a defense here, and security is certainly, you're not arguing that that's not a relatively weighty interest, right?
No, not necessarily, okay, so, no, but it still is subject to the exact text of Crooker and this significant risk. That doesn't mean that.
No, now you've moved.
I'm trying to move back to
the second part of it. We're just looking at this part of it, the internality part of it.
So, and I am agreeing that there could be a substantial portion or not.
You're not saying the government's not entitled to this presumption here, this looser connection.
No,
here.
But I'm not sure that I necessarily agree with the strength of that presumption. Mm-hmm. And that's what I meant by it's on the periphery here. Mm-hmm. I think that there is a general, just as if in some of the case law that the government has presented, there is a general presumption to the executive on national security issues. But what I'm trying to get at here is that those presumptions for Exemption 2, for the high 2 component of Exemption 2, are not as important and not as weighty as they would be in, for say, Exemption 1.
This language I quoted to you from in Schwerner was aimed at a high 2 case. That's
yes.
What they were talking about.
Yes, and if
they were saying in a high 2 case where the government's interest is weighty, it gets this additional.
That's right, but none of the arguments in Schwerner were really related to any of the arguments here on appeal, and that is to say the scope of high 2, which is the government's burden, they still have a significant risk. The government is positing that it has a lower risk, that it just disclosure of these documents.
Suppose there were a handbook for Department of Agriculture.
I'm sorry?
A handbook for
yes.
Department of Agriculture security personnel. That's covered, right?
That would be much, well, I don't want to say as a matter
okay.
of law, but
Let's,
yes, that now you're getting into the
okay,
area.
Okay, and suppose it has an appendix that includes a diagram of the property that they're supposed to secure.
Right. That is much more. Now we're getting closer.
Now we're at the Cox case exactly, right? The Cox case is a U.S. Marshal's handbook, and in the handbook it says where the ammunition and weapons are stored, right?
That's right.
And in the Navy case, the Ninth Circuit's
Milner,
it's a handbook about for Navy personnel, but just as Judge Kavanaugh says, it has pictures of where it would be really bad to be standing if the blast goes off. Right?
That's right.
Okay. So your answer to his question has to be yes, that those would be covered, right?
How would I reconcile it? Well, Milner, those are getting in close. That's in the House report. That's what was contemplated. Judge Leventhal's concurrence in Jordan, that's what's contemplated. I would argue, though, that Milner is actually wrongly decided under this circuit's law, because the agency regulations and statutes that the government was worried about the public circumventing, or those who received the documents circumventing, weren't regulating the public.
My point is just if a security handbook for security personnel is covered, it's a little odd and has an appendix with a diagram that's covered. It's a little odd to say that the diagrams or blueprints themselves in isolation wouldn't be covered.
They may be, but read together, it would depend on what the manual said. If the manual said, look at Appendix C1, and there's this particular portion of the blueprint, this is what we need to do with security.
Let me ask you a different hypo. Suppose on a different tack, suppose blueprints, you have the blueprints, and then you have the names of the people who are going to occupy each office written onto the blueprints to show where people are going to sit. Is that then related to personnel rules and practices?
I think that would be. It also probably would be subject to a different exemption under. But yes, I think that would probably be the case, though, too. Just to be clear, I am not arguing, and I apologize if my briefs come across this way, that there is a blanket exception to the exemption that blueprints should never be covered by exemption two. That's not at all.
That's how I read your brief.
That's okay. How I read it too, but I think that's helpful. So you this is sort of your last chance since you got the middle light on here. You agree that if the blue, at least to the extent, leave aside their argument about inferences, but if the blueprint showed, for example, where the fences are, where the unguarded ingresses are, where the bad things are, those would all be protectable under this section, under this exemption.
Maybe.
What's the maybe?
And the answer is, so long as the government relates it back to security procedure, which I think that the government could do, so long as the government could establish a significant risk when in your Al-Qaeda, in your honor's Al-Qaeda probably could do, but also draw the line back to the particular statutes and regulations of the USDA.
Well, can I ask you, that's a good question. That's what I'm not really following, because you're taking, so there you say it has to be a USDA one. Mm-hmm. But in Crooker, it's and you're taking this from Crooker, but sort of depends on which sentence in Crooker you read. So the introductory sentence in Crooker at 1053 says, this is with respect to the second part of the test, since its disclosure significantly risks circumvention of federal statutes or regulations. It doesn't say agency statutes or regulations.
Well, that's true, and the National Treasury Employees Union case helps us distinguish why there are two categories. Right. There are the category that I've described, which was you have to be circumventing the agency regulation or statute. But National Treasury said if you can't identify one, then exemption should apply.
What I'm asking is, why can't it be, there's a federal statute against killing a million Americans in a terrorist attack, right? I'm sure right, there's some sure. such section. And if, in the Al-Qaeda example, that providing these blueprints would allow circumvention of that statute, why do they need a USDA statute?
I'm trying to say, okay, though, is the second part of this test is the National Treasury Employees Union, which says if disclosure renders these documents entirely obsolete for the purpose for which they were designed, then it would fall within that. Now,
it even need a statute?
I'm sorry?
Why does it even need a statute?
Because
if the department establishes that it has security assessment procedures.
Yes.
And if these blueprints are a part of them because they identify areas of risk, right? Then isn't a circumvention question simply whether or not releasing the blueprints would circumvent those security assessment
releasing
procedures?
Releasing the portion of those blueprints. And it could
now you're going to the segregability thing, but forget that for a minute. Isn't that the only question? And if the government can show, or if we decide to remand the case, if the government can show that these blueprints would shed light or reveal the nature of the procedures for doing security assessments, and that releasing the blueprints would circumvent that process, why does the government have to show anything more?
In your hypothetical, that might be an instance where then these documents fall in their entirety, not getting to the segregability analysis.
No. Then you'd go on to the next step, whether or not maybe there's some of them that could be released.
Sure.
But I'm not there yet.
Okay.
So you agree with me?
I agree that so long as the government could show significant risk to the security procedures that you've described.
To the department's own security assessment procedures. That's all it needs to do.
I agree that could be the case then,
right.
Yes.
Okay.
I see that I'm out of time.
Yeah, you're out of time. We'll give you another minute or two.
Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Andrea McBarnett, and I represent the government. In this case, it's pretty clear that releasing the blueprints would jeopardize the security of BART. And also,
what in the record supports that?
I beg your pardon?
What in the record
supports that? The affidavits in this case outline in great detail the security risks.
The what?
The affidavits.
Yeah, right. Well, let me hear. The only thing I could find was an affidavit which says The physical security office has requested various building diagrams for the purpose of securing, for doing security assessment upgrades. That's Joint Appendix 168. Is there anything else?
Yes, the Thiessen declarations, and that would be in the Joint Appendix starting at 46. Uh-huh. There's also another one at 53 and another one at 107.
Right, I know about those.
Goes into detail about the safekeeping of biological agents, right, and the acts that correspond, right, with that. The, right, safekeeping of the critical infrastructure.
Right, but they say, they all say that for the blueprints to be useful, you need other information, such as where the toxins are, or things like that.
Certainly under the mosaic approach, where releasing one bit of information by itself may seem harmless, but compiling information together can be harmful.
Yeah, but see, I think you've lapsed already into the circumvention prong. The question here is, the first question is, for the government to be able to protect this, is to show that that the blueprints relate to a practice. And the practice, right, is the security assessments. Do you agree with that?
I would say it's more than just the security assessment.
What else is it?
Practices also include,
The plumbing,
for example, guidelines on how the staff uses the blueprints. Yes, for plumbing, for renovations,
how the staff uses the blueprints?
How the staff would use the blueprints.
Yeah, but how would releasing the blueprints tell you anything about those practices?
Well, if you look at the blueprints, you can see where the water lines are, where the gas lines are, where the electrical circuits are, where the foundation structures are, and what points are weakest or strongest. So releasing the blueprints, it's more...
You can see, what was the last part? You can see which parts are what?
The foundation, the structure of
You can
the
tell
building.
Where the weaknesses are from the blueprints?
Well, you can certainly see how the building is set up and maintained. So yes, I would say you can look at a blueprint
so
and figure
is,
out where
is the government's theory here, is it boiled down to this? The blueprints are used by employees, personnel of the department, in a variety of tasks, right? They use them for assigning numbers to rooms. They use them for plumbing, for electrical, and for security assessments. And that's sufficient to get it under the first element of the exemption two.
Well, that is sufficient, and they do more. Even the greenhouse uses the blueprints to figure out where the water lines are. So yes, the staff.
So anything the agency uses in its procedures is protected.
Documents that are predominantly internal.
I mean, what wouldn't be protected under your theory?
What wouldn't be?
Yeah, what wouldn't be? I mean, virtually every document in the agency is used for something.
Well, I'm not.
And it's used in accordance with agency procedures and practices.
I'm not sure what all the documents are.
Well, can you give me an example of something that wouldn't be?
I can't even guess what sort of documents BARC would have, but certainly.
I mean, Shorter says that it has to shed light on the practice. It has to shed light on it. In fact, it says significant light. Now, you get a benefit because the interest may be heavy here, right? Weighty interest. But you still have to show that it sheds light on.
Well, I would point to other examples that this court has. For example, in Vaunch versus the
FBI. What about Schwerner?
I beg your pardon?
What about Schwerner? I mean, you don't want to talk about Schwerner?
Well, in Schwerner, and quoting the court, and you mentioned before, certainly judicial willingness to sanction a weak relation to rules and practices may be greatest when the asserted government interest is relatively weighty. And
right, but it still has to shed light on it, right? I mean, you there's no question that the government gets a little flexibility here, but Schwerner says that it in the end has to shed light on it.
Isn't that because that was the argument of the government in that case? Yeah. Schwerner doesn't say that's the only way.
I would agree. There are certainly other cases that indicate a variety of documents can fall under the internality test. And again, going back to Vaunch versus the FBI.
Everything's internal.
Yeah.
Right? Uh-huh. Everything that hasn't been publicly disclosed is internal. And that's just complete make-weight. I mean, it's ridiculous, right?
I wouldn't go as
far. We can
as
keep that. Articulating it, but it's me.
Well, I could ask about that. On the theory that Amicus was talking about, has to do with who you're trying to regulate. And so a set of rules about which kinds of crimes the government is going to investigate regulates the people on the outside. While some things are predominantly internal, having nothing to do with people on the outside, and the tightest of those being the high one ones, where there's absolutely no public interest on the outside, they're totally personnel rules. They don't relate to anything outside. That's a difference between that's where this predominantly internal starts to come from, isn't it?
That might be, but we're not arguing that.
You're not arguing it's a high one, but you're still arguing it's predominantly internal. That's where the predominantly part comes in.
Right. I mean, certainly blueprints are, by their nature, internal. They're about the internal workings of the building.
So
I don't think you can get more internal than blueprints.
What about the card catalog for the Department of Agricultural Library?
The card catalog?
Yeah.
I don't think they address the structure of a building in the
same
way.
Well, but you just... now I'm confused. There's something about the structure of the building that makes it internal? The card catalog describes the books that are in its library.
That would be correct.
So, therefore...
Well, there is a second prong to the test, dealing with whether the release of the information could be used to circumvent statutes and regulations.
Isn't the answer
I don't
to
know
the
card
previous
catalog
question
would do that.
Excuse me. The agency documents that relate to agency practices vis-a-vis outside parties are now covered under Exemption 2, even though if we had followed Jordan, they wouldn't have been. In other words, handbooks, manuals that tell you, here's how you execute a search warrant, right? Okay, there's a staff manual. That, under Jordan's explanation of internal, that would not be covered by Exemption 2.
Right.
But then we departed from that, and even though it relates to how you deal with outside people, it's now still considered internal, which means everything's considered internal.
I wouldn't go as far as to say everything is considered
That's fine.
Internal,
you should...
but certainly blueprints are internal.
If we were following the text here, how is this related to personnel?
Well, again, the staff uses the blueprints in order to carry out their functions. So it relates to personnel in that
That's
way.
It's true of everything in the agency.
Possibly. But
don't
again,
need
I can't...
5, don't need Exemption 7.
I can't argue to every document that an agency has, but there is a second component to this test. It's, again, going back to the card catalog, I don't know if there's a great risk of circumvention of regulations and statutes if you give that away. Certainly, if you give a blueprint away to a wrongdoer, they can look at it, figure out the weaknesses of a building, or figure out, by deduction, what buildings are more secure or not secure that perhaps BARC is trying to protect by not releasing information others.
Can I ask you about your mosaic theory? Let's assume for the moment they've gotten past all this and we're now on the segregatability question, or at least on the question of how much risk is. So your theory is that if the blueprints told somebody, for example, the location of where the cannabis was stored, or the location of the parasitic diseases lab, that would be bad, that they could use that, right?
That's
your theory. So why have you haven't looked at the website for this organization, have you?
I have, yes.
Yeah. So why is it that the website discloses the exact location of the animal parasitic diseases lab? That's building 1040, room 103. Or the hydrology and remote sensing lab? That's building 007, room 104. And it has a very helpful explanation that is where the illicit crop phenomology studies are done. That is where the cannabis is brought after it leaves the fields. Why are you releasing all of these things if it's so important that no aspect of the mosaic be disclosed?
I can't say that no aspect, but certainly having that information, knowing where laboratories are, and then having the blueprints of the actual building enables you to get to the laboratory and perhaps steal.
Why is the government if this is a serious risk? I mean, it's possible that I shudder to say this, that the department is idiotic. But why release the exact locations and protect something that's somewhat less significant?
The blueprints are more significant, I would argue.
Yeah, more significant.
Because you know where the air ventilation ducts are. You know where the...
But if you didn't know the location of the laboratory, it wouldn't make any difference.
That would help if you did.
That would help. So what about the blueprints that are contained on your website? There are blueprints of some, for example, the butterfly house, which is where the director lives, the director's office. There's a diagram on the website. There is a complete map of the research center on the website. Maybe I shouldn't have shuddered to describe them this way, but
I think these
are things that it seems to me you have to explain. I'm not saying you can't explain these things. But it's not enough just to say that release of any information could be dangerous. This has to do with your segregatability analysis. Unless you can explain why you've released some things and not other things.
I would argue that, again, when you're looking at a blueprint, it provides a lot more information than just...
Do we know that about every blueprint?
What we know is that blueprints in general have information on...
Well, we can do better than that because the blueprints of some of these houses, for example, are also on the website and on the Maryland State Archives. Basically, the blueprint shows living room, kitchen dining room, utility room, bathroom, and bedroom. But, now, how does that help you?
But what you're looking at doesn't say, here are where the water lines are, here are where the electrical lines are,
right.
Here are where the air ventilation system is.
Have you looked at these blueprints?
I haven't looked at what you're holding.
No. Have you looked? Do you know that every blueprint contains that material?
I can't say that, no.
So if you blocked off where the water lines were and you showed just where the living room, bedroom, bathroom, and kitchen were, and since we already know which houses are residences and which ones aren't.
Well, if I blocked out the water lines by deduction, you would know that there were water lines or something that the agency wouldn't want you to have information on.
Well, maybe you could reveal only the floor plan, which is exactly what you already have revealed for some of these buildings. The argument that there is absolutely nothing in the 400 or so blueprints that can be revealed, I would be sympathetic to that argument had you not already revealed very similar things. I think you're about to get some help here from your supervisor.
I don't believe the plaintiff or the amicus made the argument that this information is public, and the onus would be on the plaintiff.
They didn't make it here or in the district court?
In the district court.
They certainly make it here.
District court, the plaintiff didn't.
You have to be careful about this, right? Because you heard some of the discussion at the bench was about a remand to allow you to make a better case in your affidavits in the district court. Now, if we were to take the position that remands for that purpose were not permissible because the argument hadn't been made below, what would be good for the goose would be good for the gander, right? So you want the opportunity, I assume, to have to be able to build a better case where the court to think that a better case would help you, right?
I was just pointing out that the plaintiff didn't make the argument that there was public information and therefore the agency needs to adjust its argument about withholding.
Did the government make the argument that in the district court that these that the blueprints related to policies and practices?
Yes.
Did?
Yes. The Thiessen declarations in particular have a long list of the various regulations and statutes and regulations.
Your submission in this case, as I understand it, is to get a clear holding that blueprints, documents relating to critical infrastructure, are covered by Exemption 2, period. Is that not your position?
That would be our preference.
Yeah. Rather than a case-by-case showing that the living room's covered but the bedroom's not, or vice versa.
I think there would be a danger of being able to figure out what information we don't want to let go of that we think would be a danger.
Especially
looking at what
context.
We can.
I mean, who knows what, threats are real. So
that's true.
But I assume that if your choice was between losing and getting a remand that would allow you to win, you would choose the latter. Is that right?
I'll make that concession.
Yeah. Let me ask you one more question. The blueprint that the guy really wants, right? There's a lot of fuss about a lot here, but all he wants, what he really originally wanted was Building 22, right?
Yes.
Now, you know, there's a picture of Building 22 also on the web. And there's also a diagram of where it was and everything. Is there a possibility that the blueprints were just transferred to the Maryland Archives? That's what happened to them?
There are very few instances of documents being transferred over, and there's nothing in the record that suggests that Building 22 information went over.
And there are a lot of pictures of the Pentagon on the, but the blueprints of the Pentagon would have been useful to people who wanted to destroy it.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. Did Mr. Roman have any time left? No, you can take 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a few points. Your Honor raises an interesting observation about the website, and now looking back on the first part of my argument, I understand why the court is placing such importance on the first part of the test, because now, if that's the case, and again, the government is right, none of these factual issues were raised in the trial court, but even on remand, I think an argument could be made that none of those would be subject to Exemption 2 as a matter of law because they fail the predominant internality test. They've broadcast it now to the world, and so we don't even need to get to...
Well, it depends on how much of it they broadcast.
Well, right.
Suppose it's just 2 or 3%.
That's correct.
Okay, so we just don't know.
And we know that the blueprints are not there.
I'm sorry?
These blueprints that we're talking about, as Judge Kavanaugh pointed out, there is information on the web that you might be able to tell from the outside, but there's no internet. There's nothing that says here is where the radioactive material is being.
No, but I guess what I'm saying is to the extent that what's on the website is also on the blueprints, literally, that would fall outside the scope of Exemption 2. Going to your point, though, Judge Garland, about the mosaic approach in this case, I know the government and this court has approved of that approach in Exemption 1 in national. That's the national security exemption, by the way, and I know this is a national security context, but we don't at all believe that the mosaic approach is appropriate here for a number of reasons. First, it's contrary to, and Judge Tatel, I think your dissent in Center for National Security's
It was a dissent.
It was
a source.
I really thought it was right, but it was a dissent.
but it's a dissent, though, that really applies here, though, because in that case...
Oh, really?
It does apply.
I like this, but I'm not sure I can get there. What's the theory?
But the exemption of being able to just say, well, these are national security issues, and so we don't need to explain too much because...
But didn't I lose that argument?
You did in the context of Exemption 7. But in the context of Exemption 2, I think it's very appropriate. Exemption 2 is a personnel rules and practices exemption. It's not a law enforcement.
But doesn't that suggest, though, that it depends on the strength of the government's interests? So...
It could. And that,
right? So if you're talking about something that puts lots of lives at risk because there's very dangerous materials, the difference between Exemption 1 and Exemption 2 probably isn't that significant.
That's true. But for Exemption 2, a narrow exemption like all the exemptions, for Exemption 2 that was really intended to be a personnel administrative type exemption, that works for Exemption 1. Clearly the strong deference to the government on Exemption 1 national security exemption works. It works to a lesser extent, but it works for Exemption 7. It doesn't at all work for Exemption 2. It's an administrative exemption. Now, to Judge Hill, your point about security procedures, your hypothetical to me was correct because it was limited to if you could tie it back to a security procedure of the USDA, not plumbing procedures. Those don't have anything to do vis-a-vis the public.
No, but even if there's a but wait a minute. If there's any practice, it doesn't have to be a security-based practice under Exemption 2, if it relates to any policy or practice, even if it is plumbing.
No, I respectfully disagree with that. Because
really?
Because
where do you find that in the...
Because the Supreme
Court... I mean, all we said in Schorner was that you know, where the government's interest is weighty, that we might tolerate a slightly looser connection. But any connection to any revelation of a government policy or practice seems to me is covered by...
I think that, though, must be constrained by what the Supreme Court started to indicate in Rose, which is those regulations have to have some interaction with the public. In all of the cases that this court has held that Exemption 2 applies, you have ATF surveillance manuals, FBI, okay. All of those. Right. Those do – they're personnel manuals, but they do have some – regulate the public, but it regulates conduct vis-a-vis the public. And plumbing doesn't have anything
good
to do
point.
With that.
Wait, I'm not sure. The implication of those is if they regulate the public, they're not predominantly internal.
Let me be a little bit more clear with what I said. If it's a manual or procedure that instructs an agency person on how to deal with the public, not necessarily regulating the public per se, but on how to deal with the public and how to deal with in its relationship with the public.
Then it's disclosed or not disclosed?
I'm sorry?
Then it is disclosed or not disclosed?
Then it doesn't, no. Then
well,
it's
what
not.
Do you do with Church of Scientology?
Which part of it?
Well, the facts. I mean, wasn't this the case where they deleted the notations for how documents are routed within the agency?
Right.
Okay, well, that doesn't affect the public at all. That's totally internal. But it tells, it would have revealed a internal practice. It had nothing to do with the public.
Right, isn't that
same
the point?
Thing's
that...
True, and same thing's true in Lasser, where it would have, where it related to codes for informants.
My point is that Rose and Judge Leventhal, in his concurring opinion in Jordan, specifically limit the scope of this exemption.
Yeah, but we have these other two cases that are circuit precedents.
I'm not sure that those arguments were presented in those cases.
Well, I'm not following your argument. Your argument isn't that the exemption applies when it regulates the public. It's that the exemption doesn't apply when it regulates the public.
Not when it regulates the public, but when it instructs an agency personnel on how to deal with the public.
That's like on the now we're on the circumvention issue then, right?
The exemption, I think, in this current argument, that it actually provides more protection to external documents.
No, but what I'm trying to do is divide where it does provide protection.
Okay.
They are protected insofar as they relate to the public. But anything else does not fall within this exemption.
Okay.
That is per se.
All right.
So unless it...
Okay, you're way over your time.
Okay.
Mr. Rani, we appointed you to serve as amicus here, and we're grateful to you for your help. And personally, I appreciate any effort to turn a dissent into circuit law.
It looks long and hard.
Thank you both. The case is submitted.
Thank you.